call the House Transportation meeting to order and let the record show that it's 1:05 and the following House members are present: Representative Lynn, Representative Feige, Vice Chair Isaacson, Representative Gaddis, and Representative Christ Tompkins, and myself, Representative Wilson. And our House Recording Secretary over here is Nancy Hemingway, and Shane over here is our LIO monitor. My Chief of Staff is Becky Rooney. And before we start, please shut off your cell phones or turn them to airplane mode. And today we're going to hear two different bills. House Bill 371, which is State Land and Minerals, that's a short title, and House Bill 194, Rights of Way. So the first bill is a Transportation Committee bill that we're introducing on behalf of the Department of DOT. So my staff, Becky Rooney, will introduce the bill and give us the background and the department details on the bill, and then we will go forward from there. And we do have a CS before us, and would someone please move the CS?
Madam Chair, I move the CS for House Bill number 371, Transportation, for discussion.
Okay. Hearing no objection, we have that bill before us. And Becky, would you go ahead and explain the changes?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. For the record, Becky Rooney, staff to Representative Peggy Wilson. You have before you a committee substitute version N, and we'll go through the details or the changes that we made to that bill before we talk about the details of the bill itself. There is a companion bill in the other body, and these changes were made just to conform to the other body's bill so that we can stay the same as we track through the process. The title was shortened, and there were a few word changes that made the bill clearer. And I can go through the specific changes if you'd like, but really they're all cosmetic. So if you'd like, I'll go through them, but otherwise we can just step into the introduction of the bill. Okay. HB 371 is a collaboration between the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities and the Department of Natural Resources to reduce the ambiguity and streamline the rights-of-way processes between the two departments. HB 371 is a no-cost solution that will save time and resources, money, for transportation projects. In addition, it will also reduce contracting requirements between DOT and DNR when accessing road materials for transportation projects. There will be a reciprocal removal of the 55-year limit on U.S. Forest Service transportation easements and DNR's log transfer property easements. Finally, DNR will transfer two DNR sites to DOT for use as maintenance stations and airstrips to accommodate recent resource development. It's Franklin Bluffs and Happy Valley up on the Dalton Highway. We have the experts here to explain the details of the bill and answer the committee's question. Madam Chair, with your permission, we'd like to have the Department of Transportation representatives come forward and explain the details of the bill.
Okay. Thank you, Becky. Any questions at all? We'll have the department come forward and explain, and Shane Lynch, who is the Assistant Attorney General, and John Bennett, right away, Chief for the Northern Region of DOT. So basically, what this bill is an agreement between the two departments, DOT and DNR, when there has to be an exchange that take place with right-of-way, so they don't have to go through the whole nine yards as if they were selling it to somebody else or something. Am I correct?
That's pretty much correct.
Okay. So go ahead and explain it officially. Okay. And state your name and affiliation first.
My name is John Bennett. I'm currently the Northern Region Right-of-Way Chief for Department of Transportation, or I should say outgoing Right-of-Way Chief.
go ahead and you can just go ahead and then we'll...
The primary purpose of this bill is essentially that it changes the relationship between the Department of Transportation and Department of Natural Resources with respect to the acquisition, management, and disposal of lands that we require for our airports, highways, and public facilities. And when you realize that 30% of the land in Alaska is owned by the state and under DNR management for the most part, you can see that our interaction with DNR for lands and materials is extensive. And what we're trying to do here and what we've done is we've repeated ourselves in three of the key provisions because we want them to apply to each of our three authorities. So the first provision, what it does is it clarifies that DOT has the primary authority to manage the surface estate for these highway rights-of-way airport properties and public facilities. That primarily relates to existing rights-of-way and existing lands that we have received from DNR or received from the federal government, but it really will go a long way to clarify the management authorities and the management roles. The second primary or the second major provision is that the bill will provide uniform language across all of our authorities for the disposal of land interests that the department has deemed excess to our needs. And the combination of this first provision declaring DOT the primary authority and the disposal uniform language will go to solve some problems, some issues that adjoining landowners have where they have encroached into the right-of-way. And we believe that with DOT having the unilateral authority to dispose of lands, we can help solve their problems. The third major provision sets up a new process for transferring land interest from Department of Natural Resources managed public domain into the Department of Transportation. And essentially, it is modeled after a federal process that we currently use with the Federal Highway Administration, who assists us in appropriating land from Bureau of Land Management and the Forest Service. And essentially, the authority that they have on federal aid highways is that when we determine that we need some right-of-way on these lands, they can go to the agency and tell them that they have 4 months to go ahead and comment, or the federal highways will appropriate it directly. They actually issue the deed to the state. So we're setting up a similar process that really streamlines the process of acquiring DNR-managed lands. Furthermore, we are trying to streamline and create a new process for acquiring materials, in that sense, sand and gravel for our projects. The current process essentially is the state contracts with the state. We enter into a material sales contract with DNR that requires payment for materials. Typically, the contracts have a limited term and also a limited quantity of material. And the difficulty we have with that situation is that the authorizations are continually lapsing, and so we have to go back and request additional authorizations, either to expand the quantity or expand the term. And it's a real drain on it's a real administrative burden for both agencies to continually go through this process. I mean, essentially what we have is the state is requesting state-owned materials to construct state-owned infrastructure, and we're trying to come up with a more efficient process to accomplish that. Furthermore, we have three separate provisions other than the DNR. We have a provision in there that will handle or will relieve DOT of having to get legislative approval, or I should say relieve the Alaska Railroad of having to get legislative approval when DOT requires fee title from the Alaska Railroad. Currently, on our projects that we require fee title from the railroad, we can negotiate and appraise just like we would with any private owner, but we then must present a bill that goes to the legislature, and the legislature has to approve that transaction. And our experience in the past is that it can add 1 to 2 years to the project delivery process, and we believe that to be an unintended consequence of the Alaska Railroad Corporation statutes. Furthermore, we have a provision that will transfer the Happy Valley and Franklin Bluffs old TAPS, Trans-Alaska Pipeline, campsites on the Dalton Highway from DNR to DOT. DOT has applied for these 20 years ago. We recognize that they are necessary for our maintenance forces to provide for efficient delivery of services. We recognize increasing resource development along that corridor, and the potential for a gas line is really going to make it important that DOT secure these sites. The reason they've been held up for these 20 years is because it's been tied up with competing municipal entitlement selections by the North Slope Borough. And the final significant provision has to do with reciprocal easements, and I'd really like to defer to Sean on that because you know so much more about that than I do.
And for the record, Sean Lynch with the Department of Law, I assist Department of Transportation. And so the Section 16 of the bill, what it will do in under a two federal highway bills back, and Congress granted easements across the Tongass National Forest to the state of Alaska, connecting our towns in southeast Alaska, in exchange for the state of Alaska granting the Forest Service easements across the state submerged lands for log transfer facilities, access to Forest Service cabins and recreational facilities. The easements were prepared and exchanged between the state and the federal government, but because of DNR regulations, the state easements to the federal government are limited to 55 years. In the reciprocal exchange, the Forest Service has limited the state's road and utility easements to the same 55 years. And so what Section 16 would allow is the DNR commissioner, on a finding of best interest to the state, to remove the 55-year limitation. And the Forest Service has told us that if their 55-year limitation was removed, they would give the state an equal term of years. And so it fixes that. It allows the extension of the state's easements across Forest Service lands.
Okay, and just for the record, I want the record to show that Representative Johnson has joined us a little while ago.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And you do have a question from Representative Isaacson.
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation. You had mentioned that Section 15 has been in dispute with municipal governments and such. Has the departments or the administration worked that out with the municipality, or what is the current status, and what would the effect be on this discussion?
Through the chair, Representative Isaacson, this particular provision, you are correct. We have competing interests, if you will. And however, when the department applied for it 20 years ago, we were applying for it on the basis that we believe that this land that is existing state land is more appropriately used for public purposes rather than be allocated under the municipal entitlement program. In reviewing the outline of the properties that we believe we need to enclose the airstrips, the material sites, and the building pads that exist, and looking at a graphic representation of the lands that had been selected by the North Slope Borough, I estimate that between a third and a half of the land that they have selected will still be available after we have carved out the property that we need. I believe that one of the reasons this is this municipal entitlement or this decision has not progressed far over these many years is because they are still competing for this interest. We just believe the public's interest in it and need of use of this property is greater, is more significant.
Madam Chair.
Follow-up, Representative.
Thank you.
Isaacson.
Yes. So, in one aspect, I could see, especially the administration's viewpoint on this, if this could be construed as perhaps another way of getting municipal revenue sharing, because if the Dalton Highway is serving a statewide interest and yet one municipality is getting an extra advantage for that, it'd be like the city of North Pole, let's say, claiming maybe some facilities along the Richardson Highway or something as part of ours so that we could tax or gain revenue or something off of the activities on that highway. Is that part of the consideration, or am I off track here? And what would be the disadvantage of having the municipality if not?
Go ahead and answer that.
Through the chair, Representative Isaacson. I believe, in all fairness, I mean, I haven't communicated with North Slope Borough, but I believe in all fairness is that their intent is revenue generation, and these are very, would be a very sought-after site. They were located for TAPS sites for a good reason due to their location and spacing and such. So I believe what they would look for is to be able to select and receive title to these sites, and then as needed by the state, they could lease them back to us. Our point of view is that we should not get into that situation, that the public's interest would be that we should retain them for public purposes.
So one last follow-up. So by inserting Section 15, does this resolve that once and for all, or does this just lay a tighter claim by the state?
Through the chair, Representative Isaacson, this will basically resolve the competition, so to speak. The legislative declaration will be that this property has transferred to the Department of Transportation and won't be immediately available for municipal entitlements. Having said that, there will be a day when maybe the use of these sites is no longer necessary, in which case they could still be eventually available for selection or conveyance to the North Slope Borough.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Christ Tompkins, you had a question?
I'll pass.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay. Thank you.
This isn't a question, it's rather a comment. So this got read across the floor yesterday. You guys came by our office yesterday. I haven't had the chance to really get into this bill, but it does seem somewhat complex, so I'm a little bit cautious about I hope we'll have more opportunity to ask questions in the future beyond today.
Well, and I want you to ask as many questions as you want today. Go right ahead. If there's anything you don't understand or anything, that's what we're here for today, is so that you can ask questions, because this is complicated. It's really simple, but to make it simple, we had to write kind of a complicated bill to get it down so that we accomplish what we want, and that's that there can be transfers between these two departments easily, and to fix a couple of things along the way. So any other questions? Representative Christophe, please.
Not today, Madam Chair. I just hope we'll have the opportunity to have maybe a day or two to digest this.
Okay. Anybody else?
Over here, please.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, in some of the railroad acts, there was the ability of right-of-ways to be transferred back to the adjacent landowners. So, and I'm never opposed to transferring land into the private hands. So why wouldn't we consider transferring this back to adjacent landowners instead of back to DNR, or vice versa?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, this provision is very narrowly tailored to only relate to the relationship between DOT and the railroad, just when DOT needs fee title to certain railroad lands. I understand the situation you're talking about railroad rights of way being reconveyed to adjoining landowners, but I don't believe that's the situation here today. So this is solely those properties that the railroad owns in fee that we intend to acquire by fee. And if I've missed your point, please help me.
Representative Johnson?
At some point, the railroad, they must not want it or they wouldn't be getting rid of it.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, this is not about the railroad not wanting it. This is about the Department of Transportation requiring it for an airport or highway project. They would not volunteer to sell it to us until we identified the need for the property and we appraised and negotiated to acquire that from them.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. And very much like the North Slope Borough,
wanting to acquire the land to lease to you, the railroad is not in great financial shape right now. So maybe they'd be better off leasing the land as opposed to transferring it fee simple.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, yes, I understand what you're saying there. We have tended to shy away from leases because at some date that term of lease will come to an end, but it's very possible that our public funds, you know, for a new project won't be in place yet. And so typically that's why we look to purchase permanent rights of way or permanent land interests, whether they be in fee or in easements, so that we have some knowledge of the future as to when we're going to need funds to re.
Representative Johnson.
You. And I guess my point is, Madam Chair, the railroad will be coming back to us for more funds, or the Department of Transportation will be coming back to us for funds to lease lands from the railroad. So one way or the other, we're going to be on the hook for this. And so I'm trying to figure out the best way to do it. Is the railroad the better vehicle, or is the Department of Transportation? It seems DOT has got more federal capabilities, federal money capabilities, where the railroad may not. Maybe better off generating money from the state as a pass-through. So I'm just trying to figure out the best way for the long-term future of both the railroad and the Department of Transportation, if this makes the most sense to do so. And I don't have an answer to that yet, so I'm a little bit like the senator from Southeast. I've got a lot of questions.
I have a question right now, and I'll get to you next.
What did I say, Senator?
wishful thinking.
So my question is, this isn't a special case. This is what DOT does to all of their dealings when they come up and when they have right of way. In every case, they want to own it. Is that correct?
That, Madam Chair, that is correct. That is the best public policy for acquisition and maintenance and operations of public projects like this. It we have to be aware of recurring costs, and by having a permanent interest in the right of way, we can avoid that recurring cost. In addition, I just want to state that we have communicated this provision with the railroad. We worked with them for the language, and they, my understanding is, they are in support of it.
Okay. What we're doing here is we're buying it from the railroad. We're not taking it from them. We're buying it from them. But we want, as the precedent has been set ever since we've been a state, DOT buys that the right-of-way and keeps it. We've made a deal with the railroad, and now we're buying it from them, which allows us to put this in this bill.
Madam Chair, that's correct. All this provision does is advance project delivery by not requiring legislative approval of the transaction.
Okay. Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And building on your line of questioning as well as the Rules Chair, my understanding is that this is going to expedite projects that we need to develop the state. It does not actually extend rail lines. It doesn't actually reconvey properties. It's just, let's say we decided to build the railroad down to Delta or across to Tok and down to the border or up north to Prudhoe Bay. You're essentially saying, okay, we with this bill, we're authorizing DOT to negotiate the land needed for that right-of-way. So we could speed up a project if the legislature has approved it in advance, like, say, a railroad somewhere.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Isaacson, a good example in your area would be Illinois Street, downtown Fairbanks. We acquired a large amount of property from the railroad. We needed to acquire it in fee. That required that we have a bill run through the legislature. That either took 1 to 2 years added on to the project timeline to secure the permission for the railroad to execute a deed. We can go ahead and appraise the property. We can even negotiate the price. But the railroad cannot execute the deed for fee title without the approval of the legislature.
And so, Madam Chair.
Representative Isaacson.
So what you're actually saying is you're helping to restrain development costs, construction costs, because if we have to wait 2 years, costs of everything goes up. And so if we're looking at saving the railroad, ultimately some money, this is one of the best ways to do it on a project that they need.
Through the chair, Representative Isaacson, that is correct. That is one of the benefits of advancing projects.
So, Madam.
Follow up?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So, is there anything that we're not seeing that could be an unintended consequence, such as what might have been voiced? Is there a downside to this in any way?
Through the chair, Representative Isaacson, I actually considered this particular provision of the bill to be the most benign. I thought this was that essentially it was an unintended consequence of the original statutes for the railroad, that the legislature certainly couldn't have intended to delay projects just so that they could grant the approval for this transaction between a state-owned entity and the State Department of Transportation.
And I would like to make a comment. And all these projects aren't something that DOT just went off and did on their own. They're projects that the legislature said, we want you to do this project. So the legislature already gave approval for the project. But in this instance, because of the way it's set up for the railroad, every time something like that would happen, we'd have to stop everything and go and to the legislature again and get permission to do just that certain thing.
Madam Chair, you're absolutely correct. These are typically major capital improvement projects.
Okay, thank you. Representative Gaddis, do you have a question?
Well, I had a clarifying statement, and I think between the two of you, you just did it. And just to be sure that I'm on the right track, it's certainly a state agency or state property to state property is what we're really discussing, not necessarily the state acquiring private property.
Through the chair, Representative Gaddis, you're almost on on point there. The portions of the bill that relate to the transfer of properties from DNR public domain to DOT, that's really what you would consider, you know, state public property to state public property. The railroad statute set them up as a state-owned corporation, so we treat them like they're a private property owner. So it is a little bit different how that works.
Follow-up, Representative Gaddis.
But I guess my point is we're really not talking about individual property rights.
Through the chair, Representative Gaddis, you're absolutely correct.
That you clarified. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Johnson.
Two things. First of all, anything with railroad in it is not simple and is not benign. I want to go back in history, that was set up because we wanted control from a legislature and legislator of transfer of railroad land to anyone. I mean, even to extend leases, we had bills just recently to extend to go to a longer lease we did. And that is a function of this body's unwillingness to give up control of the Alaska Railroad. I don't know that that's changed. So I just want to make sure that we know you understand that nothing simple when it's got the railroad in it, nothing benign when it's got the railroad in it. And that's been a long-standing philosophy of this body, is to not just carte blanche, let the railroad, even if it's a very narrowly positioned state to state, to relinquish that type of control. So.
I have a question then. This is only with DOT. It's not with any other private entity that the railroad would be trying to sell a part of their land anywhere. This is only to DOT.
Madam Chair, that's absolutely correct.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen. And now I think we will have DNR. There's two sides to every story, they say. So let's have DNR come up here and let us hear from them. And Ed, if you would state your name and affiliation.
This one's got more than four.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ed Fogles, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. DNR is fine with this bill. We've worked with DOT for many months on this bill. The fundamental concept of this bill is right in line with the work that we've been doing for years, trying to improve our permitting processes, eliminate duplicative bureaucracy and unnecessary processes. I think, as has been said, why should the state contract with itself for material sales if DOT needs to utilize materials within its right-of-way for its road projects? That's up to them to utilize them. This bill will still allow DNR to manage the subsurface and lands within those right-of-ways for other uses, of course, putting DOT's needs at the top. So I think all in all, you know, again, it's a mechanism to eliminate a lot of repetitive and unnecessary work for both agencies.
Will it save money for either agency?
Madam Chair, yes, it should. That's the intent.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Representative Gaddis.
Well, again, I don't know this question, but again, more of a statement, but time is money. And what I'm hearing Commissioner indicate that is that it will save time.
Representative Gaddis, through the chair, yes, absolutely. I think by money, I mean time, staff time. There will be work that my staff won't have to do now if this bill should go forward.
Okay. And how much, what are we talking about in time? I mean, what's the average amount of time that it takes for when you have to, your staff and their staff and your staff and their staff, how much time does it gain? I mean, do we gain a year or?
Madam Chair, I think that's probably a little difficult to quantify that. I mean, we spend a lot of energy and time within DNR adjudicating material sales, and quite frankly, a lot, if not most of those, are have something to do with roads or highway projects somewhere. So you know, I would just have to say it's you know, there's a lot of time that we spend right now on working on material sales for road projects. If we can just kind of move those all over to the department, you know, I'd say we probably have a couple people that are working pretty hard on those issues within DNR right now, and maybe most of their time might just be, you know, able to be devoted to reducing the backlog somewhere else or making some other part of DNR go faster. So just a kind of a big estimate on my part.
Okay, so maybe permits in some other area or something?
Exactly, Madam Chair.
Sounds good to me. Any other questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. And we're talking primarily gravel, right?
Representative
materials.
Representative Johnson, through the chair. Yeah, well, gravel, rock, sand, and
so on.
Representative Johnson.
Aren't most of those like on private companies have leased those?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, in many instances, we have, DNR has material sale contracts for material sites, some of which we have multiple contracts for. Some of those sites have multiple contracts with the private sector and with DOT. So we would have to work all that out. You know, in a fresh site that's just DOT, a new site that would be just DOT, that would be solely up to them. For a pre-existing site, we would have to work with DOT to make sure that the pre-existing contracts are all taken care of.
Okay, Representative Johnson.
And I guess maybe the best way is maybe through an example. I want to avoid an example where you've got a private company bidding on a state job,
mm-hmm.
and the state basically says we can do it because we have this sweetheart deal for the materials.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to, and I don't believe, even though they got a sweetheart deal, that the state employees can probably do it as well, or maybe as well, but not as cheaply as the private sector. I think it's been proven out time and time again, especially on road projects. That's why we don't have the state doing a lot of that. So what I want to do is make sure that we're not building a state bureaucracy in DOT that's taking private jobs because they've got a sweetheart deal on materials. Help me understand why that doesn't happen.
Representative Johnson, through the chair, and I may need some backup from DOT on this here, but I mean, the way we look at it is, I mean, you're going to have third-party contractors working these projects regardless, and all we're doing is we're eliminating the DNR component from that chain. So DOT would then administer those contracts with the third-party contractors to do the road construction and use those materials. So I don't know. I guess they deserted me.
Well, the Senate is Transportation Committee is meeting at the same time with the same bill, so that's where they had to speak to.
Yeah. And Madam Chair, maybe I'm missing something, but I just want to make sure that we're not setting up a Department of Transportation bureaucracy that can overcharge to a private contractor materials so that they don't have a chance of winning a private sector bid over a public sector job. So somehow in that materials transfer, I want to make sure that everyone is on equal footing, not just DOT doesn't have the ability. DNR has to be fair. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's they've got to, it's regardless who it is. So there's an advantage to that, but I also understand the advantage of us maybe paying a little more for the stuff we need, but I don't want to put it in such a situation where we sacrifice private industry jobs just to hire a bunch of more Department of Transportation employees to do what's being done quite adequately now by the private sector. So,
I'm just trying to think if there was a way that we could make sure that didn't happen.
Madam Chair, I don't have a lot of answers. I've got some questions.
Madam Chair, I think that, I think that we could probably get back to the committee with a clarification. We can work with DOT to make sure. I have a feeling that that's probably something that's taken care of in DOT statutes and regs. I'm not that familiar with them, but we can probably nail that answer down pretty clearly and get that back to the committee if you guys want.
And then we'll just, are there any other questions? We'll just hold the bill till next time. And that way, if the questions that anybody would have, and Representative Christ Tompkins has feels a little uncomfortable. Representative Johnson feels a little comfortable. So we'll just hold it for the next time. For that's Thursday, so I want you to do your homework. And if you have any questions, Representative Christ Tompkins.
This is a question, Section 4, and I guess as a consequence, Section 2 and 10. And in Section 4, I'm reading lines 15 through 17, and if the department determines that no longer needs the land, notify DNR, the commissioner of DNR, and then it seems that the Department of Transportation has the ability to dispose of the land. Does that mean that the Department of Transportation would take in the revenue from that land sale, or is there any significance to that, or am I even reading or understanding that section of the bill correctly?
Representative Christ Tompkins, through the chair, these are DOT statutes. If it were DNR, we have our own mechanisms for land sale, land disposal. We have a land disposal income fund that money goes into, and we can reuse that, but that was established by the legislature. I'm not sure what kind of mechanisms DOT has. We'd have to have them get back to you. Maybe it just goes right back to the general fund after it gets sold.
Follow up, Representatives.
Yeah, I'd be really interested. What's sort of standard protocol? I mean, if DNR already has an established process and kind of knows how to sell state land, I'm wondering if DOT should be duplicating what DNR already does and presumably does well.
Representative Christ Tompkins, the chair. Keep in mind that DNR's authorities and plan program is for land sales to the public. That's what we do. We take significant amounts of lands and sell them to the public. That's not what DOT does. That's not the intent of this section here. It's for little remnants. It's for when you do a highway realignment, there's a little sliver left right now. The issues are that DOT can't dispose of that. They have to come to us to dispose of it for them, and it does add a lot of unnecessary time and bureaucracy in there. That's one place where it's pretty clear that this would actually eliminate a lot of unnecessary bureaucracy by letting DOT just deal with these remnants directly.
Madam Chair, on that point, I think that would be a great money to go in the transportation fund.
Sounds good to me. Representative Feige.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Anything for the transportation fund. In Section 4, is there sort of an implied priority here? It says, you know, May 1, transfer the land property interest to the Department of Natural Resources if requested by the Commissioner of Natural Resources. Does that imply that the DNR would have first right of refusal on this? Is that the intent? Or is that, can DOT basically dispose of it as they see fit without that priority?
Representative Feige, through the chair, I think the intent of that last statement in that section is so that the Commissioner of DNR has to agree to take the land back before DOT can just give it back to us. So we want to be part of that decision. We don't want DOT just to give us something automatically, and we'd like to at least know, you know, what the land is and make sure we agree with DOT that it should come to DNR. So that was sort of the intent of that, to give us the sort of the say. You can't just give us something without us actually wanting it or okaying it.
And I noticed that's in Section 2, that's in Section 4, right. It's in Section 10. I mean, it's in a lot of places.
Right, right.
Representative Feige, follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is that something we want to put in there? Because there's the other case that the DNR may want the land.
Mm-hmm.
But then DOT says, well, the heck with you, we're going to sell it to somebody else. Is that, do we want to make it clear that there's a priority? If you guys want the land back, that you should have first right of refusal on it?
That's
or
it
should we, you know, could we, I mean, we can make a wording change through all of that.
But so. If I read it right, it says the department shall notify the commissioner of transfer of land or disposal of land. So
right.
The commissioner has to know ahead of time.
Right, Madam Chair, he would, yeah, that the intent is to notify us so we know, and I guess the only hook there, though, is that we would actually have to request it to get it.
Oh, I see.
So.
And my question is, if you request it, do you automatically get it, or is it still up to the DOT commissioner? Do we want to put that implied, do you want to make that, that first right of refusal language a little stronger there, or is that not the intent?
Representative Feige, through the chair, I would leave that up to the legals. The way we interpreted this is that, you know, if we think the DNR should have it, then we get it. But if there's a way to make it stronger, to make people more comfortable, then, you know, we have no problem with discussing that. But that's the intent.
So you would like to have first right of refusal? In other words, a priority on the land.
Yeah, off the top of my head, I don't see why that would be an issue. And again, Representative Feige, through the chair, again, these are all lands that have been used for transportation purposes, and typically we're talking about small remnants here, and on many of those, we're probably just going to want to, you know, see if the adjacent, you know, landowner would like to purchase it or pick it up, you know, kind of a lot of really complex little situations.
I'm thinking right now of a road in Ketchikan that we're straightening the road. And so there's a curve, and they're taking that curve out. And so right now it kind of curves like this, and there's an existing business right here. And so they're straightening it out. So there's a sliver right in front there that is hardly wider than this room, I don't think. Mm-hmm. But and so it's just a pain, you know, because who wants it, you know?
Right.
And in this instance, I think it was given to the borough, you know, and see if they can figure out something to do with it, you know. So, I would assume when I read this, it says if the department, which is DOT, determines that land, property interest, or improvements are no longer necessary and they don't need that land, the department shall notify the Commissioner of Resources of the determination and may then they may transfer the land or dispose of the land. So, but they and no matter what they have to notify DNR.
Right.
And like you say. I don't know if that means they get first choice or not. Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, and I don't think that it does. I think it intends to give them first right. But I also want to caution there are situations where condemnation has occurred. They decide not to buy the project, and instead of going back to the original landowner, or giving them a choice of going back, this would automatically go back to DNR. So I want to be real careful.
Well, DNR had it to begin with.
No. If it's condemned, it's private ownership.
Oh, I see. I see what you're saying.
It's a private ownership, goes to DOT.
But this doesn't count then.
Nope, it's DOT. No, it would. DOT land, is they decide they don't need it. They've condemned it from a private person. It's now DOT land. They decide they don't need it. According to this, it goes to, as opposed to back to the, given the original property owner the opportunity. So I just want to make sure that I'm not wrong on that. Mm-hmm. Or if I am right, I want to make sure we fix that.
Ed, you had to look like
you had Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, through the chair, again, it would be good to have Mr. Lynch here, too, to explain this. But kind of the way I'm reading this is Part B basically says that the department shall notify the Commissioner of Natural Resources of the determination and may either one or two, and one is transfer the land to DNR if we request it, or two, dispose of the land, property interests, or improvements by sale, lease, vacation, exchange. So DOT has that choice.
Representative Johnson.
And, Madam Chair, that is my point.
Mm-hmm.
If you condemn somebody's land, you should not have the choice, if you don't use it, but to offer it back to them. So I just want to, I don't know how we work that in there. Maybe it's not a problem. Maybe they use everything they condemn, but I don't think so.
Okay, Representative Feige.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the way I read it, it does give them that choice right now. The question is, if DNR wants the land,
then it goes to them.
It doesn't say that, though. It's still up to the DOT commissioner, as I read this. He can decide, the requirement is for DNR to request the land if they want it. It's still up to the DOT.
I don't agree with that. But, Madam Chair, even regardless of the interpretation,
okay,
if you condemn someone's land and you don't use it, there should not be a choice for a commissioner to say, we want to do A, B, C, or D. The first choice should be the person who they ought to be able to buy that land back.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my only point, regardless of how you interpret the rest of it.
Right. Yeah. And if I'm thinking right, there are circumstances that the land was condemned just because people left it, moved away, and they don't want to deal with it. They don't want to pay the taxes on it anymore. So there are instances when people just don't want to, they'd rather leave it than continue making payments or stuff like that.
Madam Chair, and I agree, and that's a different issue than actually going through a condemnation procedure or a agreed buyout even. It's not always condemned. If you agree to buy the land and you don't use it, the person who that's been agreed to buy or condemn should have first right of refusal on that, not a commissioner someplace. So that's all, and that's all.
Rightfully so.
I think so. And I don't think that's allowed. I think they could condemn my land, not use it, and decide that it goes to BLM.
Okay.
The way it is right now.
We need to ask them. That's a question that we can ask them at the next meeting, because that is important. I've got a feeling that there's rules in there for stuff like that, but we need to find out. And it probably is in the statutes even. I don't know. You're right. Representative Feige, I guess I was thinking that DOT has the responsibility to notify the Commissioner of Natural Resources no matter what.
That's correct.
Okay. And so you said if only if DNR asked for it.
Well, that's subparagraph one. Basically, the allowance.
If requested by the Commissioner.
They have to know it. But what it says is that the DOT commissioner may transfer the land, but only if it's may transfer it to DNR. But they can't just arbitrarily do that. It has to be requested by DNR. It may also, at the end of line 19, resources or dispose of the land through whatever means it wants to. My original question was, if the DNR wants the land, do they have an automatic preference? Is that what's implied here? In other words, if DNR requests the land, should that land be automatically transferred to DNR, or should it still the way it reads now, it's basically still up to the DOT commissioner to determine how to dispose of that land.
Okay.
And so the basic policy question is,
refusal to DNR.
Yeah, should we have, do we want to have that, or do we want to leave the flexibility in the way it's written right now, leave it up to the DOT commissioner? And then your point about condemnation is
yeah, it's else. Really too bad that they're not here. So, but they aren't. I wonder if they're done over there. Did they think about coming back over?
But would you?
Sorry, Madam Chair.
But I tell you what. So what we'll do is we'll just save this for our next meeting unless they come back and are here when we get done with the next bill. So let's move. We've got halfway. We've got two bills, and so let's go ahead and hear the rest of the bill. Thank you, Ed, very much for your
thank you. I better get over to the other committee and answer all the DOT's tough questions for them over there now. Thank you. It's something left too soon.
After this meeting, you'll think that that's a breeze, probably. Okay, let's move on then to the next bill, and we have House Bill 194, Rights of Way. And we're working from a sponsor substitute version in on your bill. So, Representative Foster, will you please come forward and state your name and present your staff?
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Representative Neil Foster, House District 39 from Nome over to Fort Yukon and down to Copper Center. If I could also have Joe Bovey from OTNA also come up to the table, if that's okay. And sure. Then with me, I also have my Chief of Staff, Paul LeBoule, here.
Okay. And then is that going to stay up? Or does that one side have to move over?
I think we
can all. Yeah, that's okay. We'll be good here.
And so as each one talks, just state your name so that secretary will know that the person that's now talking, so they can get that on the record. So, Joe, are you going to give the presentation, or are you going to go ahead and...
Madam Chair, Representative Foster, what I was going to do is give the 30,000-foot
okay.
Explanation, and my Chief of Staff, Paul LeBoule, will get into some of the more specifics, and then we'll drill down to the real nitty-gritty with Joe Bovey. So.
Sounds good.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The goal of House Bill 194 is to preserve public access via what are known as RS-2477 rights of way, while at the same time minimizing the negative effects on private landowners. RS-2477s are right-of-ways that include public trails, roads, and highways. And what I want to stress is that this bill does not prevent folks from using public transportation routes from getting from point A to point B. What the bill does do is it says that usage is limited to point-to-point transportation and emergency stopping. So why is that? Because many of these RS-2477s go through private lands. If rest stops, pullouts, and campgrounds were constructed along these RS-2477s, then that opens up public access and use of the surrounding private lands. And so, Madam Chair, if it's okay, I will go ahead and hand it over to my Chief of Staff, Paul. He can kind of talk a little bit more about some of the things.
Don't you want to do the presentation, or does that come later? Or?
So this is essentially, in a nutshell, what the bill does. And so my Chief of Staff will get into kind of defining what we're talking about and exactly the widths of the right-of-ways and some of the other issues that we have with this. So if that's okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Paul LeBoule, staff to Representative Foster, and expounding on what he was saying, the plan is essentially I'll do a sectional walkthrough, and then we'll turn it over to Joe Bovey from OTNA to give you more of the why. So I'll give you the what, and he'll give you the why. I think I'd like to start with Section 2, if that's all right with the members of the committee, and then I'll follow up with Section 1. If you look at Section 2, Subsection A, it takes RS-2477 rights away from 100 feet down to 60 feet. It's an attempt to balance the property rights of landowners with the access rights of the state. Section B limits the use of RS-2477 to transportation purposes. RS-2477s have their roots in the Mining Act of 1866. Section 8 of that act establishes that rights-of-way are for construction of highways. And Alaska statutes for the state highway system say that a highway is for purposes of vehicular transportation. So this section clarifies Alaska law as to how RS-2477 should be used. Subsection C sets up the conditions for secondary easements to enter, inspect, repair, maintain, and improve a right-of-way, and sets up the guidelines for dispute resolution. Section D allows for realignment of rights-of-way through the existing eminent domain statutes. Section E specifies what is included in the term routine maintenance and repair. That completes Section 2, and then if you go back to Section 1, that section vacates a specific RS-2477 right-of-way that is overlapped by a 17B easement. 17B easements were created during the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act and are similar to what this bill proposes for RS-2477 right-of-ways. And we've got Joe Bovey from Montana here that can give us more detail and answer more questions. They're the one who brought this concept to us.
Okay, and I need a lot more education on this. It's very confusing. So do you want to give the presentation? Is that what you... Because I think maybe if we see the presentation, maybe we'll understand it a little bit better. Mm-hmm. So is that what you're going to do?
Madam Chair, my name is, and members of the committee, my name is Joe Bowie. I'm the Vice President of Land and Resources for Otten Incorporated, and I appreciate your time. We're just trying to get the PowerPoint up here.
We'll just take a brief at ease and let that get going. Back on the record, there you go. Okay, please proceed, and Joe, if you would go ahead and why don't you restate your name and Representative Foster, you have a statement.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make a comment, and I think it's something that's worth remembering as we go along here. Joe Bovey from Otna is with the Regional Native Corporation in the Copper Center area there, but I just wanted to make sure that folks understood that this isn't just a Alaska Native Corporation issue. It's also just it's a private landowner's issue for folks throughout the state, and so this affects all kinds of classes of landowners, and so I just wanted to kind of underscore that. So with that, apologize and thank you.
Okay.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joe Bovey. I'm the Vice President of Land and Resources of Otten Incorporated, and I'd like to just give you a brief overview of what an RS-2477 is. Basically, an RS-2447 is an obscure Civil War mining statute that granted right-of-ways across unreserved federal lands, primarily in the western states and territories in Alaska. The map here shows primarily what public lands were in Alaska prior to 1971. Some of the legal definitions, and this is off the State of Alaska website, the statute reads...
Hang on a second. Representative
Isaacson.
Thank you. Would you go back to the map and highlight what you're trying to show? It looks like public lands pre-1971, of course, you're trying to say that all lands in Alaska were either state or federal, or what's the big point that you're making with it?
The big point is primarily before AGSA, most of the lands were private except around the municipalities and homesteads and things like that. Some communities were private land, but primarily 99% of the land was under federal or state jurisdictions of ownership.
Thank you. And I ask that, Madam Chair, because on our PowerPoint, it doesn't really have any lines, so I can't tell.
Yeah, I can't tell either. To me, it looks like it's all federal land.
Or public.
Yeah. Public lands, state or federal.
Okay.
This is off the State of Alaska website. The statute reads for RS-2477s that the right-of-way for this construction of highways over public lands not reserved for public uses is hereby granted. Again, on the DNR website, the word highway was historically used to refer to foot trails, pack trails, sled dog trails, crudely built wagon roads, and other corridors for transportation. The term highway is defined in state statute AS 19.59-00018 as a road, street, trail, walk bridge, tunnel, drainage, etc. The process of asserting an RS 2477 is far from consistent and has been the subject of litigation between the federal government, the states, and private landowners all across North America and the United States. In 1998, the Alaska legislature instructed, while providing for the public's right to use these historic access easements, quote, every effort should be made to minimize the effect on private property owners. Current Alaska land status. In Alaska right now, the DNR has identified 669 RS 2477s in the state. Examples range from DeBar Road in Anchorage and Farmers Loop Road in Fairbanks to numerous unimproved foot trails, some of which may not be visible or identifiable on the ground. In the Otna region, or Otna land, 142 RS 2477s are located.
We don't have those slides in our packet, so.
Okay. The next slide again shows the RS 2477s overlaid on the state map, primarily mostly public lands, federal and state. The next one shows private and public lands as they are probably currently today, as close as we can get. The blue indicates private land ownership. The yellow, again, is either federal or state ownership.
Oh, federal or state.
Yep. So there's, from the black lines on there, those are all the RS 2477s. As like I said before, some of them overlap existing highways and roads. Some of them are unapproved footpaths. But the black lines represent where they're located throughout the state.
And originally, those are just trails that were here years ago.
Madam Chair, yes, most of them that were adopted or used were utilized in the mining times, you know, in the late 1800s, early 1900s. Some of them were, again, developed or reconstructed for highways, you know, like the DeBar Road in Anchorage and Farmers Loop in Fairbanks, part of the Richardson Highways and RS 2477 and that sort of thing.
Okay.
The next map shows just a little bit more detail there without the colors. The current Otna land status, which I can speak more knowledgeably on, other than other areas and regions of the state, Otna land contains 402 linear miles of RS 2477s. If you would put a 100-foot right-of-way, which is mandated currently, the 402 linear miles would consume 9,406 acres. The next map here shows where Otna lands are located, and the red is Otna ownership lands that has been conveyed. And the next slide, Otna lands with RS 2477 roads, shows where these RS 2477s are located across Otna lands. It doesn't show exclusively like homesteads and other areas or private property, because it's just some of the private property ownership is with 10 acres or 40 or 160, so it's a little bit hard to show it on a large-scale map.
So would you go back and say how many acres was this altogether?
Out of the 402 linear miles of RS 2477s on Otna land, with a 100-foot right-of-way, it would consume 9,406 acres.
Wow.
Otna land contained over 221 linear miles of 17B easements, and as Representative Foster identified before, 17B is part 17B out of ANCSCA, defining a trail or a public use across Native Corporation lands. And the 17B or the RS 244, we have a question here, the Clutina Lake Road, or more identifiable by RST number 633 is also a 17B. So there's a lot of these that overlap with an existing easement. Many are duplicative of existing ANCSA 17Bs, or approximately 529 miles worth. So out of these 17Bs, federal easements, and RS 2477s, 529 are duplicative.
Now, explain what that means. So you already have them, and then you're counting them twice? I don't understand what you mean.
Madam Chair, no, basically there's two prescribed easements across private property, at least on Native Corporation land, and it also addresses some private non-ANCSA land. And these are, a 17B can range in width between 25 to 60 feet, whereas an RS-2477 is predominantly 100 feet wide. So what I'm saying is, or trying to explain, is that a 17B is already here, and we have an RS-2477 basically over the same trail or the same road, so they're duplicative.
And the 17B is narrower, and so the RS, whatever, is wider, so that takes up more property than the other one does.
Madam Chair, yes, that's
okay.
Correct.
Thank you.
Approximately 98 linear miles of 17B easements are duplicative of RS-2477 road, so there's a total miles worth there. The one above that, 17Bs are public easements, like I said, ranging from 25 feet to 60 feet in width. And again, here's a map showing Otna land with the RS-2477s, and what I was specifically pointing at with the amount of miles on there was only on Otna land ownership. These other little dotted lines you may be able to see kind of going through the topography there to the north, south, and east, those are not part of what my presentation is because those are still primarily on public lands. That's going to be the state and BLM and Park Service issue. And Otten Lands, here's one of the 17B easements current.
That was the green?
It's the green ones on the bottom. Yes, ma'am. The problems of ours, 2477 for landowners. Right-of-ways are a significant burden on the underlying landowner. As we identified before, thousands of acres are consumed by these right-of-ways. The other thing is, if you're ever going to transfer, sell, trade your property, it's really unknown, unless you have these identified in your property, what is there.
So, I have a question. So the RS-2477s are federal rules.
They were federal rules granted to the state western states. It was a part of the 1866 mining law.
So now it's a state rule and not a federal rule?
The state doesn't, Madam Chair, the state doesn't, the federal government doesn't, they, out of the 669 from our inventory, I think they identify three or four that are actually needed or necessary to use.
Yeah, but when I'm asking you, who has authority over them, the state or the feds?
Madam Chair, the state of Alaska.
The state of Alaska does, okay.
I also brought some pictures because I know pictures are worth a thousand words. This is an RS-2477 trail located near Cantwell. This is also part of what they probably call the Windy Creek Trail. This used to be the old access into Denali National Park up until the 60s, I believe. And this is what the trail looks like now. It's 100 foot wide. There's no restrictions on vehicle use, timing of the year, environment. This trail is over in the Bear Valley on the way to Tolk. Same thing as an RS-2477 overlaid with a 17B easement, no restriction on use, so people can go in there any time of the year with any size of equipment without any kind of permit or environmental conditions applied.
And is this considered DNR land?
No, ma'am. This is on the surface and subsurface land with a public easement going through it. The next picture is a photograph up by Mentasta. This is what they call the tractor trail. This goes to public lands, state primarily lands around Mancomin Lake. This is another trail south of Mentasta. It's an RS-2477 with a duplicative 17B. This trail I can't recall where that photograph was taken. This picture here is one of the things that with opening up the lands and things like that without a good management plan and prescriptions applied, this is what happens. This photograph here is part of the Copper Center to Valdez right-of-way, RST-633. Here's another picture of the Clotina Lake Road, RST-633. Obviously, these trails were built from the shortest point between A and B, and they weren't, you know, considering flooding events, erosion, mass wasting, the best location. They were just probably
basically just the shortest way to get from point A to B. This is another photograph of RST 633, the Clatina Lake Road, Valdez to Copper Center Trail. This is RS 2477 near Chitna, also overlaid with a 17B easement. The problem that arises is that with the DOT and the DNR and things like that, ATNA has made a concerted effort to work with the different agencies, because there's a lot of ground, there's a lot of things that we agree on, but when we come down to it, these RS 2477, because the statute and the regs and the law is generally not very tight, that when you start asking questions or trying to resolve issues, I mean, they always go back to the statute and things like that and say, well, our hands are basically tied. The state claims in general RS 2477s are 100 feet wide and could be relocated as necessary if natural conditions make the route impassable or unsafe. The state of Alaska also claims a right to enter property to perform maintenance and repair work such as paving, leveling, grading, installation of culverts and riprap, maintenance of drainage ditches, clearing vegetation, and realigning the road. The state of Alaska contends that the public has extensive use rights within the right-of-way that include not only transportation, similar to a highway, but also rest stops, pullouts, boat launches, picnic areas, fishing access, and campgrounds. And just a note here is that several of the pictures that we showed with RST 633, the Clatina Lake Road, it's approximately 22 miles long. It starts on a public highway, the Richardson Highway. It goes up to the head of Clatina Lake. At that point, it goes through 18 private landowners, non-ANCSA landowners. It's a native allotment that has been subdivided. And the trail, as defined on the map and through state officials, is going to go right through people's basically driveways, front yards, and that sort of thing.
I have a question about that. So the people owned the land and everything first, and then they just said, this is where they're going to be?
No, they didn't have no idea that the trail was, Madam Chair, the folks up there at the head of the lake didn't know that the trail was even there until about 5 or 6 years ago. They used the access into their private land holdings for the previous 30 or 40 years, but until the state asserted their rights over this RS 2477, they didn't realize that the ATV trail that now accesses their cabins and fishing camps and things like that is going to be 100 feet wide, and basically most of their property of 1, 2, 5 acres is going to be consumed by this right-of-way.
So all the land that you picked as your land allotment, you didn't know either that there was going to be all this through it, or that there were going to be private properties scattered through it.
Madam Chair, that's correct. We didn't have really some of the property was already there, like the property that I'm referring to with the 18 private landowners up there now. That used to be a native allotment. The person passed away, it was purchased, it was subdivided, and now there's 18 landowners up there that didn't have any idea that this 100-foot right-of-way was going to go through their front yard.
I see. And that didn't happen until just 5 years ago?
Madam Chair, it really hasn't happened yet. The state has asserted this, but the road is still only about 4 foot. The trail is only 4 foot wide going through their property to get to public lands on the
other side. I've been on a lot of those trails. We used to live in Tok, and we'd go hunting on a lot of the trails with a ATV. Mm-hmm. So I've been on a lot of them. But I didn't. So the state of Alaska is saying you have to let people go through there. Is that what the state of Alaska is? What is the state of Alaska saying?
That it's a public easement, Madam Chair, that it's a public easement that the public can use it indiscriminately any time of the year with any kind of conditions, any kind of equipment.
With no rules or regulations or anything?
Madam Chair, not that I'm aware of.
But I think this needs to go through resources also, this bill.
Madam Chair, that's its next committee of referral.
Oh, it is? Okay. Okay. Well, I'm glad. So you have some proposed solutions.
Madam Chair, we do.
Okay.
We identified the problems, now we came with the solutions.
One of the alternatives that we've looked at is limiting the scope of the use of the RS-2477s. We are not opposed, as Representative Foster conveyed at the beginning, of allowing access. Otna Corporation, myself personally, we are very pro-development. We have mining interests, mineral exploration, oil and gas exploration, timber harvesting, renewable energy projects and things like that. We invite people to come out and develop our resources. But also, with the 100-foot right-of-way and the unregulated use within the right-of-way as camping and rest areas and boat launches, that sort of thing, it just opens it up. The other thing that I would say here is that if the state is in some minor budget crisis, at least this year, a lot of these trails and roads, once they're public, who's going to pay to manage these roads? Because suddenly, you know, they just kind of get out of hand and people kind of go hither or what, here and yonder and stuff like that. So it's something you have to consider, too, that if you open up hundreds and hundreds of miles of these RS-2477s, who's going to manage it? My personal opinion is that the DOT has a lot. They do a great job on our highways, but they're always lacking in funds even to keep the, you know, the federal highways between our cities open. Here's another solution. This is also an RS-2477. This is the head of the Yannert River Trail. It's a local name of the Yannert River Trail. This accesses a large state hunting area north of Cantwell. This one here, and it's just because if we have more leeway in some of our statutes and regulations, we're working with the state DOT and the DNR right now to realign this route, this trail, around a gravel pit there by the Parks Highway. And I believe the DOT and DNR will be using part of the allocated funds the governor had in his budget last year to develop a parking site along the highway and eventually reroute this trail away from an active material site.
Now, who owns that active material site?
Otna owns the material site, ma'am.
Yeah.
Another thing that I think is a promising point is we signed an MOU with the Department of Transportation, Department of Fish and Game, and the Department of Natural Resources last summer. And so part of the MOU is that we have quarterly meetings with the state agencies. And one of the things is we come to the meetings with is we try to resolve issue. Like I said before, there's a lot of things that the state and the private landowners and ANCSA landowners have in common that we can develop jointly and use our resources more wisely. But to require consultation with the private landowner prior to engaging in anything other than routine maintenance or improvement activities. You know, it's a good neighbor policy where if something's happening, I'm going to call you. If something's going on my property, that might impact your property. Also, possibly require consultation with the private landlords prior to realigning damaged segments of the right-of-way. The RST 633, the Valdez, the Copper Center, RS-2477, that has been realigned several times or numerous times. In 2006, part of the road washed into the Clatina River. The next year, Otna, the Bureau of Land Management, and the State of Alaska signed an agreement saying that, hey, we're going to realign this. We're not trying to restrict access. We just would like to have a good, safe access for public users to get to and from public lands. House Bill 194 would also specifically vacate portions of RS-2477 along the Clatina Lake Road, effectively ending any ongoing or proposed litigation with the state. And on behalf of Otten Incorporated and myself personally, I'd like to thank you very much.
Okay, now I have a question here. Go ahead, Representative Foster. Go ahead with your comment.
Madam Chairman, this is a very complex issue, and as we kind of were going through this, I thought what we need to do is maybe get you a little chart. And the chart would show, you know, have a column that says this is what RS-2477s do. The width would be 100 feet.
Yeah.
You know, access, you could have pullouts and campgrounds and things. In terms of improvements, you know, no consultations required. The impact is substantial. And then you have another column over here that says this is what a 17B looks like. And essentially what we're trying to do is say what we'd like to do is minimize the impact to the landowner, as was mentioned in the slide that he had, where the Alaska legislature, the intent was to have a minimal impact on landowners. And if you look at, you know, if you boil it down to a smaller example. If I owned a home, you know, somewhere, or a farm in Kenny Lake, for example, and RS 2477 went through my land, I as a landowner would want as minimal an impact on me and my private land as possible. And so, you know, would I want the state to put a road with a 100-foot right-of-way in there, or a 60-foot, and would I want them to put, you know, a campground, you know, within that right-of-way, but now people, when they're camping, they're going to, you know, go onto my land now, or do I want, you know, something that just allows for point-to-point access, so that you just go through my land, but you don't stop onto my land. So kind of that's the gist of it for me as I look at this. And so anyway, I just wanted to put that on the record, so thank you.
Now, my question is about the lawsuit. If there's a lawsuit, I know you can't go into it, but there's a lawsuit now over this very thing, or what?
Madam Chair and committee members, we were started into mediation, and we had a retired Superior Court judge mediating our discussion between the state and ATNA. But like I said, I think where we came to a brick wall is because the state, in my opinion, and I'm not an attorney, would look at provisions that's already in the statute regulations and say, hey, we can't do that because it's up to you folks to change that or amend that, because they got to go by the law.
Now, does this bill amends the things the way you want it? And I mean, that doesn't mean that I would agree with it, but it amends it so that you would be happy.
Madam Chair, yes. It would not still restrict any kind of access across private land to get to reach private or public state land, but it would limit the uses on the easement or the right-of-way, and also define the width of the right-of-way.
Okay, Representative Wilson, Representative Feige, and then Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Reading back through some of the supporting documents, specifically talking about the private parcels up by Clutina Lake. Do you guys have a plat map or something that shows where those where all the right-of-ways go? Obviously, there's interest in being able to access the lake or the outlet area of the lake, or just sort of like to see how all that is arranged in the geography up there. There was also some notes from, or some letters from, some of the private landowners. I guess the 17B easement ends, but the RS-2477 continues on through those private areas. Since it's not overlapping, this bill would not remove, it would not vacate those 2477 easements. I'd just like to see what the geography up there looks like, and if we need to vacate those easements as well, which is something we can do in statute.
Representative Feige, through the chair, I would be happy to send the committee, you know, a detailed plat map of the area up there and how the trails or the RS-2477s are situated on the properties.
Okay.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 2, line 9, where it says can only maintain a road on private land as it was maintained October 21st of 76. Aren't we advocating all of our RS-2477 lands right-of-ways if we do that? Because if it's not been maintained and it's there's nothing there, because a lot of these are not, we're still in litigation with the federal government. They haven't been declared, there's still a bunch of them out there. So are we not just giving up on those lands? On those, maybe a road that goes all the way from, well, Fairbanks to Nome, that's been used before. If it crosses any private land, we, according to this, cannot maintain it any differently than it was in 76. Aren't we just basically saying, throwing our hands up and says, we're not going to develop any of those right-of-ways?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, I'm not aware of all the RS-247s in the 2477s in the state. I am aware of about 90% of them in the ATNA territory or the ATNA region, and 95% of those are not developed. They're only foot trails, sled trails, pack trails, that sort of thing.
Follow up?
So, Madam Chair, that's my point. They will never be more than that.
Representative Johnson, through the chair, that's the point of this bill, is that if they're identified as a foot trail or ATV trail now, why don't we just leave them as an ATV trail or a maximum of 60 feet so that there's room to develop that for a mining road or a logging road or something like that in the future?
But that's not what, thank you, Madam Chair, that's not what it says. It says be maintained as it existed in 1976. That means no development. That means if it's a walking trail, it's a walking trail.
Mm-hmm.
And if you discover the largest gold deposit on the planet that crosses private land, we can't get to it. Mm-hmm. Even though the federal government and everyone on the planet has said we're entitled that right away. So I've got, that's a concern that I have. I think we are advocating all of, and not just Dotton. I mean, I think this is, mm-hmm. and of the, of all the 2477 lands that we've got, or right-of-ways we have, there are probably 10 times more out there that we could have. Because what you have to do is you prove it's been a foot trail, prove it's been a mode of transportation, and you have to go back through history. And the federal government, we almost have to sue the federal government over every one of them now. And we're trying to work on a system, have been in the past, where once you prove a certain level, they automatically admit it, they won't do that. Even though you've got pictures of sled dogs and people doing this. So I'm afraid that by doing this in this particular area, we're advocating those other potential thousands of miles across federal land and private that may have a private inholding in it. So I don't want to advocate, I want to make sure we don't advocate that. So that's one point. The second point, if an RS-2477 runs right beside a river, and we say there can't be a boat launch, aren't we denying access to a commonly owned resource by not allowing a boat launch? Because we all have access to the water. That's in our Constitution. That's publicly owned land. So the road runs right beside it. This bill says we can't have a boat launch. Mm-hmm. We're denying access under our Constitution. So those are just, I have some concerns, and I understand what you're trying to do. I get it.
Uh-huh.
I know that there's abuses. But I don't want to make sure that we don't handcuff ourselves for future development, not necessarily in your area, but Western Alaska and everything else. And I understand that, and maybe there's a way we can meet in the middle, but to freeze stuff at 1976 and to not allow Alaskans access to their constitutionally uh-huh. mandated access to water, two areas that I've seen where I've got some problems that maybe we can adjust, look at, and then we're going to hold this over and I can work with the sponsor. But some of these things cause me concern. Mm-hmm. We have a constant battle, and I just want the federal government to say, hey, we never have to do anything anymore because they've frozen mm-hmm. RS-2477 lands in state statute. So we never have to, we just have to wait for a few people to die that have pictures of the old trail, mm-hmm. and we win. So I want to make sure that we're not sending the wrong message to the federal government for the rest of our right-of-ways, and we'll make sure that we don't step on okay. constitutional stuff from the others. So. But I appreciate where you're trying to go. I mean, I get the private ownership stuff.
Representative Isaacson.
I appreciate you coming forward with this, and normally I would say, yeah, try to make a solution that mm-hmm. is universal, that'll fit everywhere in Alaska, but I do think that this is going too far, and as just expressed is part of my concern, because we're looking at the interests of developing a state. If we restrict ourselves, mm-hmm. then what value are we leaving, what heritage are we leaving as required by our Constitution to the next generations?
Mm-hmm.
Parts of the right-of-way issue, I'm not really understanding, and so I'm glad you're going to supply us with the map. But I've been a mayor of a city before, and I've had a lot of folks complain about the right-of-way requirements in the city for our streets. Well, we don't need this much now, except for us it's where do you put the snow, or you know, some of these smaller streets have become bigger streets, you know, when you're looking at the future use, it's hard to predict where growth will occur, but we do know that growth occurs alongside roads. And so one of the issues, if I could just make this comment, because I do have a couple comments and questions to ask you. One of the ways is recognizing that for many, many years in the future, a lot of the right-of-way will not be used. I like the fact that you pointed out we don't have really a management plan, and that seems to be the biggest issue. But we're still in the development phases of accumulating our RS-247. But we do have enough that we should start looking at managing the right-of-ways and making sure property owners are aware of the use. But I'm not sure that it's really compelling to me. Maybe you can make it more compelling, especially when you look at the fact that Farmer's Loop was an RS-2477, and that has grown from a little trail when I first came to Alaska in the 70s to now it's, in many places, four lanes and bigger. And so it is using that entire right-of-way. DeBar, of course, is a very big example. Richardson Highway. These are things 100 years ago people wouldn't have suspected necessarily that would develop. And so we don't want to impede the development, I would think, even within OTNA, because it's hard for us to predict, other than knowing that if you have a trail, it will most likely become a road, and development occurs along a road, especially if there's a destination and a connection, and you will be needing that in the future. One of my questions would be, I was told, I just got back from D.C., and I was told that there is a similar bill, maybe not yours, but that's what I'm asking, and I need to research it, that Congressman Young is going to have hearings on. Do you have a bill in Congress on this subject?
Representative Isaacson, through the chair, there is now, but it has nothing to do with RS-2477s.
Through the chair, Madam
Follow
Chair.
Up.
So I understood that it was on something similar. How would that bill affect what we do here? The description that I heard, and I wanted to talk to congressmen and wasn't able to, but it was basically groups within the state saying we have more right than the rest of the state to our transportation corridors. Is this related to that at all?
Representative Isaacson, through the chair, I am not aware of that at all, not with the transportation.
All right, so I'll look that up. Well, I guess a lot more. I'll reserve questions until we get those plat maps. One of the things I would think in this particular issue is that I would be more inclined to listen to solving a particular issue on a particular road, especially if there is, in one case, if I remember reading correctly, it's parallel to the highway and maybe not as necessary for whatever reasons. I'd be more inclined to hearing some issues that would be addressing specific problems that are faced right now rather than locking up the lands, as I see this, globally around the state of Alaska.
Okay. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And looking at the fiscal note, and I'm seeing that statewide we have 20,000 linear miles of RS-2477s, and once we end up selling everything, it's closer to 26,600 linear miles. I want to be very cautious that we're not jeopardizing that 26,000 miles of access.
Wow.
And I think yours was 900 miles, did you say?
400
miles. So when we look at this in as a statewide perspective, and I certainly understand what you're up against, and I get it. I've spent a lot of time in that part of the world. But I just don't want to jeopardize those other 26,600 miles that we would not be able to change from what they existed in 1976. So a lot of questions. It's not just an OTNA issue, as you started, and I appreciate you started that. It is a statewide issue that basically it allows us to control our future. If we have access, 26,000 miles of access to Alaska, that's a substantial amount, and I would hate to give that up.
Yes.
So thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to point that out to the members.
Okay, go ahead.
Madam Chair, Paula Bull, staff to Representative Foster. Just wanted to make a clarification point for the record on the fiscal note. the 20,000 linear miles, approximately 50% of that is over private land. So we're talking about approximately 10,000 miles, as the bill only applies to RS-2477s that cross privately owned land.
And to follow up. And I appreciate that, but as we see the checkerboard of things, 1 acre in the middle of that 26,000 miles could keep it all from happening. I mean, so I understand that the private land and the public land is an issue, but if I were an enterprising young environmentalist who wanted to keep roads from being built, I would have 1 acre private sections across about every 100 miles of RS-2477 lands and sell it to somebody, and it becomes private land and cannot develop any. Then we'd never have to go to court again, and they would win.
Yeah.
They being the universal we.
It says,
and I'm not an enterprising environmentalist, by the way.
It says that.
For the record.
But you're giving ideas to.
Yeah, no, I am. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it says that diminishing it, the right-of-way, by 40 feet would at a minimum equate to 48,500 acres.
Sure. Yeah, Madam Chair. Just
Representative Isaacson.
Thank you. And that goes back, and I appreciate what you're saying, but it goes back to the municipal model. And sometime in the future, Otna Territory, as well as out west and east and everywhere else, we're going to have more settlements, because it is the policy of the state to encourage the settlement of the land. That's what we are mandated to do here, and the development. Maximum use, maximum, you know, benefit, et cetera, et cetera. So in the cities, we have this problem where it's private land until used for public interest. Here we have an advantage, because we still have historically public use trails, and that is access to private lands, which will evolve over the years. Other enterprising individuals, not just an NGO, but enterprising individuals will see opportunity, because there is public access, and all of a sudden something happened within the land, as has been alluded to, that now development is critical, and we've restricted it to, you know, in an age of technology, to dog sleds and you know, four-wheelers. I can't get over that hurdle, because we have to build a state, and we are required first and foremost to protect the ability to settle the land. And so that's what I would encourage you to look at. This is, find a way to solve a particular problem without restricting us throughout the state in ways that are not your intention. I don't believe it are your intention.
And you know, I've been around for 14 years now, and we're in the same fix now that we were when I first came in, and that was at that time we were in a deficit mess, and what was happening is that we were trying to figure out ways how to get out of it, and because of the low population of the state, it was almost impossible, because we didn't have enough people in our state to do it a sales tax, because it wouldn't, by the time you paid for the bureaucracy that would collect it, it would hardly be worth it. And the same thing with an income tax, unless you had a pretty darn high one, we found. So what the state needs more than anything else is more population, more people. We really need that. I mean, that's just amazing, but that is so true. We need the population to grow. So, are there any other questions from the committee?
Actually,
Representative Feisegui.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, Madam Chair. There's a piece of supporting documentation here. It's public access information from the BLM. And it talks about the Clotina Lake Road, otherwise known as the Brenwick Craig Road, and then it talks about the Clotina Trail. Mm-hmm. Are those two different, or are they part of the same access to Clotina Lake?
Representative Feige, through the chair, yes, the Brenwick Craig Road is more commonly referred to as the Clotina Lake Road. And the Clotina Lake Trail is just that, because a 17B easement stops at not private property, not ANCSA private property, at the head of the lake, at the mouth of the lake, excuse me. So from there on, it continues on with this is a trail where it turns into exclusively an RS-2477 because it's no longer an ANCSA 17B.
Okay, so the Clutina Lake Road goes to the outlet of Clutina Lake, and then the Clutina Trail continues beyond that up the, what, the like the north shore of the lake?
Representative Feige, through the chair, it goes up the, it wraps around the north side of Clutina Lake Road, the Clutina Lake wraps around and basically goes all the way to Valdez from that point.
Okay, gotcha.
Any other questions? Like I said before, we're going to hold this bill, and I've got a feeling you aren't going to have time to get those maps and everything by Thursday. So perhaps a week from, I don't know, we'll have to, you let us know when you have the information, and then we'll schedule another hearing. And we don't have anything else, and we don't have anything this coming Thursday, or do we? What do we have Thursday? Okay, well, let me look. She's got it written down for me. We'll be hearing House 343, State Buildings, Construction, and Maintenance, and another bill that is pending referral. This bill will bring CDL requirements in line with federal regulations. So that's another department bill. So, maybe that isn't a department. That might be your bill. I can't remember. Is it department? I thought it was. Okay, so anyway, we will end this meeting and go home.